Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
For over 100 years, Jones Topsoil has been part of your community, delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. Slinger Jones, bringing it home to you. Whether you're planting a vibrant flower bed, growing your own vegetables, or giving your lawn a fresh start, be the envy of the neighborhood with topsoil and mulch from Slinger Jones. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at jonestopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elijah Campbell manning the board at our Hillside Medical Games Studios. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick. We thought the suit, Chase McCabe, was going to give it a full ride today. We thought we were getting him ready yesterday for a full show today. That's not going to happen. But I guess he's still going to be available. He's going to be in the bullpen and available anytime we want him, like after like a certain portion of the game. So we'll just, you know, we'll utilize him soon, but just not now. Willie, how we doing?
All right. We're all just going to have to step up our game that much more until we get the big fella in here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, once he's become a suit, we've come accustomed to that. You know, we do longer. You know, we do more long toss. So we're good. Our arms are good. We're ready to go.
We're stretched out.
We are stretched out. Jacksonville has no longer stretched out their search. I feel like they interviewed everybody. But they have finally narrowed their candidate down to one, and they have named Doug Peterson the next head coach. So there's two openings in the Titans division in the AFC South, and one has been filled. Doug Peterson, new head coach down in Jacksonville. What do you think?
He's got the ring.
He does.
That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Did he wear it to the interview?
Probably didn't need to, I would think. I have to say, you know, when's the last – I guess we all had our doubts, wonder, the unknown X factor, if you will, for Urban Meyer. Doug Marrone, you know, seasoned vet that had been around the league several times but had never really had a huge run as a successful head coach. I'm trying to think of who was before Marrone. But, like, when's the last time you really felt like, you know, I guess Jack Del Rio was there for a long time, but this guy comes in with credentials. I feel like he's coming in. He's got a quarterback that he thinks he can do something with. He's a great offensive mind, or at least he has been, you know, for the long haul. You got Travis Etienne coming back. I think he sees a great opportunity there. So my first thought is, okay, Jags might have it together here.
Well, don't forget, you know, he probably used the Carson Wentz, you know, developing young quarterbacks.
Sure.
He used that to his advantage. Yeah. I mean, look, we don't know what I still believe. I'm not ready to punt. I said the Titans should tank to get Trevor Lawrence to have the elite quarterback because I believe he's going to be elite. It's obviously hasn't been shown in the first year, but I don't know how much you can chalk it up to the dumpster fire that is Jacksonville. Do you know how many games that franchise has lost in the last decade? Just take a wild stab.
Well, we know.
No. I mean, I know the number. What? Just take a guess. Just think about it.
When you say the last decade, you're saying since
last 10 seasons. How many losses do they have?
Well, let's say 10 times 10 on average. So let's say about 100.
That's a good start, right? Good start. 119. Just think about that. That's almost 12 losses a season.
But you know what? If you're Doug Peterson, That doesn't deter you as much because in this league, everything is designed for teams like that to get good. You've got so many things going your way. You got the same amount of money to spend. You've been picking high. Your schedule's a little bit easier, although that's been blunted a little bit in the recent years since expansion and things like that. But I think that you know, the Jaguars, at some point, you should be good. The Buccaneers were bad for decades. They were the laughing stock for a long, long time. And that was even before a salary cap. And eventually, they turned it around. So in the Jaguars, it's not like they've never won. They did have some good years in there. So,
well, I just
you know, I hope that they still struggle to get it together. But if I'm the Titans, I probably am sitting there going, well, they're probably going to be better. I can't count on them just being awful again.
How long has Shad Khan been the owner?
Not sure.
Because
it seems like 10 years or so.
Okay. That's what I'm getting.
Ish. Maybe a little less.
Remember when people were like, hey, you know, when the Urban Meyer, you know, Shad Khan, he's shown he's willing to be patient with coaches. Has he really? Has he really shown that? I just told you they've lost 119 games in 10 seasons. They've been a disaster since he's been the owner. For a guy that's got the deep pockets and everybody praised him being the owner, they have been an absolute tire fire since he's been their owner. Just a pile of garbage in the NFL. Just put them in there in the heap with the Detroit Lions franchise and, you know, all the other ones we make fun of. The New York Jets. I mean, those franchises that year in and year out, most of the time, Cincinnati until they drafted Joe Burrow. And that's not really true, though. Andy Dalton did take them to some playoffs. So they weren't a dumpster fire with Andy Dalton. They just couldn't advance. They couldn't win a playoff game. But they weren't a dumpster fire. But that organization's been awful. By the way, did you mention Gus Bradley? As I was kind of multitasking when you were listing names. Did you say Gus Bradley?
I did not.
Yeah. He was the one before Marone. And if you remember, it was Mike Mularkey with his short stint the 1 year before Gus Bradley. Who Mularkey went 2-14 the year he was the head coach. I think it's an interesting hire. I don't know what happened in Philadelphia. You know, it is interesting to me, Willie. You know, and I'm guilty of this. Guilty as charged. Because I've been saying for a good while, which is kind of why I laugh at this whole narrative in this market now. Everybody wants the elite quarterback. It's like, where have you been? Are you the NCAA? Did you just wake up from your slumber? I've been saying this for a long time. This is what you need. That's what you need to get there year in and year out, to give your best foot the best opportunity. That's what you need. But, you know, I don't know when you think about this with Peterson. I don't know what happened in Philadelphia. What I was getting at is, you know, we say, oh, like I said, I'm guilty. If you bring in Tom Brady and he wins the Super Bowl and he's 2 years and he bounces and retires and then you go back to crap, is it worth it? And we all go, yes! I'm guilty as charged. Yes, it's all worth it. Aaron Rodgers for a season or two. Who cares what it looks like afterwards? It is interesting that everybody has that mentality, but you would think organizations have that mentality too, right? Well, why was Doug Peterson available? He won a Super Bowl. He won a Super Bowl. And how much longer did he get after that? What was it, 2 seasons? He's fired.
It's Philadelphia.
Right, I know, but that's what I'm saying, right? Like we all go, yes, just whatever it takes, win, and then we don't care what happens after that. Really? Well, tell coaches that, because how many coaches have
right.
we seen
it's,
win
it's
it all,
true.
And then they're on the street
well,
two, 3 years later?
That's why I'm always saying I'm not signing up for signing.
I know.
I'm not signing up for trading three first-round picks and stuff like that for the quarterback. I don't think you do that. It's not smart. And the Rams will find out. I mean, they are probably the most extreme team I've ever seen in terms of going all in on 1 year for the most part. I don't know if they'll just be bad next year, but there will be a steep decline for them. It's inevitable.
Oh, the day of reckoning will come for sure. But the question is, what will the resume look like before the day of reckoning, right? Do they have rings? Do they have a ring? Do they have, you know, again, you know, got to the altar, got left, get the runner-up trophy, you know, like last time? I don't know. We're about to find out here very soon in, what, 9 days.
The Eagles won it without the huge investment in the one quarterback. Well, it was pretty unique circumstances.
Well, they thought they had
in
Carson Wentz, remember? But
well, they drafted him, though.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. They thought they had – remember, he was having the unbelievable year. It was like, oh, my gosh, we got our franchise elite quarterback. He was this guy was going to be MVP, and he goes down for the season. Nick Foles comes in, does the rest, and takes him all to the Super Bowl and wins it. And then the rest is history on Carson Wentz. Never been the same. And who knows if he'll even be back in this division next year. I mean, I suspect Indianapolis is stuck, probably just like the Titans are stuck. So we shall see. I think it's actually a good hire, though. I really do. I don't know. It's hard to believe that anybody can really turn the Jags around, but it's really going to depend on Trevor Lawrence, right? What is he? What is he? Is he going to emerge as the number one pick overall and be this next great, the next great? He's going to join the class that we can name right now. Is he going to join Joe Burrow and we believe Justin Herbert, even though he hasn't won a playoff game, and those young quarterbacks, they're going to take the mantle now that these old guys, the old Hall of Famers, are moving on? They're going out to pasture? I don't know. But if he is, then I suspect even the Jags, a bad organization, because you know, all you need is that guy, then you can get things turned around. But right now, we don't know. I still believe he is, but I don't know. It was impossible to tell this year, right? I mean, I know, one, you probably weren't watching very many Jacksonville games, but two, there just wasn't a whole lot there because they were just an absolute disaster. So we shall see. We'll come back. John Glennon covers the Titans. We'll talk about the offseason, something he just wrote. We'll get into all that. On the other side, as you listen, Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase on this Friday, presented by Curation CBD Products. Curated for life. You just made the list. Coming up at high noon, tickets to see Bon Jovi at Bridgestone Arena on April 30th. That's what's at stake, but you're going to have to call in and participate. He's John Glennon at Glennon Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. He covers the Titans for SI.com. He now joins us. John, you just recently wrote an article about the headline, Derrick Henry shows signs of decline even before the injury. Tell everybody about it.
Well, yes, that was one that clearly went over well with the great mass of Titans fans. But what I'm saying basically, or what I'm kind of analyzing in the article basically, is that this is not a huge fall from grace for Derrick Henry, but what I was taking a look at was there a drop at all from the unbelievable level that Derrick Henry showed in 2019 and 2020 to what he showed in those first eight games of 2021? You know, and in three specific areas, you know, I did see evidence that there was, you know, Derrick Henry was not at quite the same level. Now, that's a relative term, you know, because he was so good in those in 2019 and 2020, but kind of in three areas, like yards after contact was down, what is known by Pro Football Focus as an elusive rating, that was down, and rushing yards over expected, as it's tracked by Next Gen Stats, all of those were down, you know, from the top 2 years. You know, so you just wonder, I think, when you have a back like Derrick Henry, who's carried so many times, over the years, you know, you just kind of wonder when wear and tear might start to kick in and whether, you know, if the Titans see that, agree with that, and you know, maybe tweak the offense a little bit moving forward and say, you know, we can't give that same amount of carries to Derrick Henry going forward. So just kind of raising questions, you know, showing some evidence as well, and we'll see where it goes from there.
What do you think is the biggest contributing factor? Is it the workload that he had in the 2,000-yard season? Is it the Jones fracture? Is it, you know, getting older? I mean, where would you start? Where would you begin with if that were the case? Because I've brought up on the show many times here lately that and other people have said the same thing since I brought it up on the show. Eddie George was not the same after the turf toe. I mean, he played that entire season. He played through it. But he was never the same. And I thought Eddie George, you know, it was impossible. That guy was just a freak of nature, and he was. But he was never the same. So it can happen to even people you think it can't happen to. So with that being said, where do you – if you had to start somewhere, where would you start as maybe you think it would contribute to that the most?
Yeah, well, you have to wonder, I think, you know, when we look at what the Derrick Henry injury was, you know, was that Jones fracture of the foot. And one possibility for that is, you know, wear and tear, continued use. And that makes sense considering, A, the incredible number of carries that Derrick Henry had, and, B, the fact that he is a very big man, you know, 6'3", 247 pounds, so he's putting a lot of stress on that foot time after time after time. So, you know, Mike Vrabel said at the end of the year he did not believe that the injury was related to wear and tear. Again, I guess it's they didn't say necessarily what they thought was the reason for that injury. But, you know, I think it's fair to at least question, you know, whether that played a part. And again, that's when you look at, okay, was that hampering him slowly, you know, as the season went on, even before it became a complete break and was diagnosed at the end of that Indianapolis game. And again, you know, I think this question comes with Derrick Henry and with any of the backs, you know, that we've seen over the years. You mentioned Eddie George, any of those backs that have just huge amounts of carry year after year. There's always that question in the back of your mind of saying, okay, when do things start to slide a little? When does all that wear and tear and all the hits start to show? And what, so far we have seen Derrick Henry be, you know, virtually indestructible. Now all of a sudden he's coming back from that injury, and not only do you wonder, okay, is he going to be back to the same level of Derrick Henry, but, you know, if it was all that wear and tear that contributed to the injury, can you have Derrick Henry come back and carry 25 times a game going forward again?
How do you think they feel about it over there? Do you think that there will be any discussion behind closed doors that, hey, we got to lighten up the workload, which, you know, maybe that entails, you know, keeping the guys that carried the freight while he was out? You know, maybe that you figure out a way to keep Foreman around. You keep figure out a way to keep Hilliard around. Guys that can take some of the workload off. How do you think those discussions, or do you think that this is even something they're even thinking about? Like, we all know he didn't look the same in the Cincinnati game, but, you know, I mean, that's literally the first game back. And we had TJ Houshmandzadeh on the Friday before that game and said, I know you guys are excited, but, you know, I got a close friend that plays in the league that had the same exact injury. Took him 8 months to get back. So, yeah. You know, I wonder, what do you think their mentality is behind closed doors?
I'm sure they're, you know, taking a look at the continued progress. You know, as you say, you know, when he came back for that playoff game, he was still running with, you know, a steel plate in his foot and screws in that foot as well. So, you know, even Derrick Henry, as quick as he bounces back from things and what an incredible workout warrior he is, you know, I still think it was going to take a few games before he felt comfortable and felt completely confident again. You know, we've all heard athletes over the years talk about, you know, having to kind of break through that wall of, you know, maybe it's even in the back of their minds worrying about that injury, you know, worrying in Derrick Henry's case, maybe, hey, when I plant this foot, you know, is everything going to be fine? Am I going to be feeling a little bit of pain? Is there going to be any hesitation on my part? That kind of thing. So, you know, I'm sure the Titans are monitoring that continued rehab, but I am sure that they would love, and it's going to be tough to do, I would think, but I'm sure they would love to keep Deontay Foreman, for instance. I mean, you know, here's a guy with a style similar to Derrick Henry who fit well in that scheme. You know, you just wonder if there's another team out there saying, hey, you know, we run maybe, you know, somewhat type of a similar scheme. I bet Deontay Foreman could do well here. And a team with more cap money that says, hey, you know, the Titans can give you X amount of money and, you know, pay you to be a backup to Derrick Henry. Or, hey, maybe you can come here, get more money and be a featured player. And I'm sure, you know, understandably, that might be a tempting scenario for Deontay Foreman.
We're talking to John Glennon. He's got some really good numbers on SI.com on some of the slight declines that we've seen in Derrick Henry's games before he had the injury. So that's, I think, the important thing to keep in mind as we try to break this down is everything in your article, John, has to do with things that happened before the injury. Then everything that's going forward is going to be dealing with both, right? The wear and tear plus just coming back from the injury that kept him out. So I'm reminded a little bit, John, of the history here. Going back to Eddie George, he had the 400 carry season. The following year in 2001, he got the turf toe, and he was never the same. He rebounded to be a decent back, but the Titans, you look back on it, they sort of hedged their bets. They drafted Chris Brown. They brought Chris Brown in, and there was a time where Chris Brown was an effective, if nothing else, change of pace with Eddie George. I'm reminded of that, but as you just sort of mentioned, the salary cap kind of dictates your budget there.
Yeah, it really does, and this is, you know, at this point anyway, it's a bit of a tight situation for the Titans. You know, they're actually, I believe, technically a little bit over the cap right now. You know, they're going to have to get down, and we may well see some cap casualties. So, you know, the chances of re-signing a guy like Foreman will depend probably on, you know, just how much they get below the cap. But, yeah, I think, as I said, any of these backs, you know, whether it's Derrick Henry or Eddie George or you know, even like, you know, back in the day, an Eric Dickerson or someone like that, you just wonder, as well as they are performing, you know, at some point, is there going to be that number that gets hit in terms of carries, in terms of yardage, in terms of wear and tear, where things are going to start to slide a little bit. Now, and again, and I pointed these things out in the article as well, I'm not talking about some massive fall from grace for Derrick Henry. You know, it's a relative term. Derrick Henry, you know, was leading the league in rushing, well, you know, when he got hurt after eight games, and continued to lead the league for, you know, a number of weeks after that. So we're not talking about the end of the line, you know, for Derrick Henry, certainly. And I think another fair question that is asked, and should be mentioned here too, is that Derrick Henry traditionally picks up steam and the numbers improve in that second half of the season as well. So that should be factored in also. You know, the fact that, you know, maybe we weren't looking at vintage Derrick Henry in games 1 through 8, that we should, you know, also pay attention to what he traditionally does in the latter half of the year as well. But
that's a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of when I read your article, John, sure. Because another thing that I picked up on was if you're in the argument of just, look, the history of the league suggests that there is depreciation for almost all backs who have that kind of workload over time. It's natural. This isn't anything new, and it's nothing against Derrick Henry. What you're hoping for is that Derrick Henry is the special guy who's an exception who can handle that kind of workload. But some of the stats you had pointed out that in 2019, he actually scored higher in some of those analytical categories than he did in 2020.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, yeah, to what you were saying also about the, you know, or as I was saying earlier about the second half of the season, I kind of went back and looked a little bit at the numbers, you know, comparing maybe games 1 through 8 in both those seasons previous to the 2021 season as well. And what it looked like to me, you know, I did see in terms of like a rushing yards over expectation, which traditionally has been a great stat for Derrick Henry, I did see in that category that he did take a big leap in the second half of the season in both 2019 and 2020. So maybe from that standpoint, you say, okay, you know, maybe we say he was just picking up steam. But the two other categories I looked at, which were yards after contact and kind of that elusive rating, which is tracked by Pro Football Focus, there wasn't a jump in those categories in the second half of the season in either of those. So, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag. And as you say, yeah, some of the numbers were down a little bit 2019 to 2020 as well. It's in some ways you can compare it a little bit, you know, to the quarterback situation, to Ryan Tannehill, because his numbers were spectacular in 2019. They were very good in 2020, but not quite as good. And of course, we saw them struggle in 2021. And again, Derrick Henry's decline, if you want to say that, is nowhere near what we saw from Ryan Tannehill. So it's just, as I said, with any running back like that, you always have to ask that question, when is it too much? You know, and are yeah. we starting to see that from Derrick Henry? Or is it just a fluke and everything's going to be fine once he comes back and feels confident, you know, after the foot injury as well?
Well, John, I think it's great work by you. If people listen to this show, they know I've been talking about this for a long time. It would be wise for the Titans to not ignore the history of workload for running backs. It's just right there, plain as day. And so it is a huge issue. So I'm glad you broke it down. Really good stuff. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Okay, sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, John Glennon. SI.com is where you can take a closer look at these numbers. Just look at him on Twitter, Glennon Sports. And you'll see the article, SI.com, on Henry's workload. Before the injury, there was a slight decline in some of the analytics. Still a brilliant running back, no question about it, but a tick down. But a lot of things that we discussed that are factors. I want to talk to Darren about that a little bit more when we come back, because I think this is a massive, massive issue that's being overshadowed right now with salary cap stuff, the quarterback stuff. But really, Derrick Henry is right at the center of everything you do. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We're back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good discussion with John Glennon. With all of the hoopla of the quarterback situation with the Titans, Ryan Tannehill's poor performance in the game against the Bengals, what to do about it, why did they lose? All the salary cap issues, Harold Landry. In my opinion, what's been lost in the shuffle is this discussion we're about to have, and just we're having with John Glennon, about managing the workload of Derrick Henry. Darren, you know, going back a couple years, I've been tracking this, and when Derrick Henry last year had 378 carries, coming off of a year where he had 303, but then had three playoff games as well, that I was concerned about this. True?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, to the point where I was probably driving you guys crazy, and you guys started to probably think I was nuts going into this year. But John's question about did the stress fracture happen because of workload? There's really no way to answer that question, but I don't think you can definitively say the answer is no, no connection. Am I wrong about that? I'm no doctor or anything like that, but I think you can say I don't know, but I don't think you can say no, which was sort of Mike Vrabel's defiant answer. You know, he did kind of hedge it and say, I've not had that impression from any doctor. But I think when you really look back on it, you do have to wonder. Right? And the thing is, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't cry over spilled milk. They made their decisions, and they rode the horse because they sort of had to. We know the team was struggling so badly with injuries and issues in the first half that they had to turn to him. So I didn't blame them for doing it. But looking back on it, I do think they may have paid a price.
Well, I think it's an impossible task. I don't think anybody is at fault. I don't think there's anybody to blame, because what do you do? Just think about it. Derrick Henry is a special running back. He is the best running back in the league, and he helps you win football games. He is critical to your success, and you need him. And at times, he took over games. So what do you do? I mean, honestly, like, if you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
No question.
If you take him out of the game and you tell people, hey, we're trying to preserve this guy, people are going to go nuts.
Especially,
I mean, they're going to go absolutely nuts.
Julio Jones was hurt. A.J. Brown was hurt. Bud Dupree was hurt. The defense had still not found its groove. The offensive line had all kinds of problems. Taylor Lewan was struggling. He missed some time. So what else did they have to keep them afloat in the first half of the season? They had Derrick Henry. So they may well have gone into the season thinking, you know what, if perfect world here, we got Julio Jones, maybe let's give it to him a few less times per game. But that ended up being a choice that they didn't have. So in retrospect, they may have planned to do this to ease the workload, but they didn't have the luxury of doing it. Is that? I mean, I think that's a theory that might have some merit there.
I don't think you ever. When do you ever really have the luxury? Unless you're a team that was like the Patriots team, and was it the 07 team?
Yeah.
And you're winning. You know, you're winning games 48-7 every week, and you're cruising, and you're destroying everybody. Or like the Chiefs have been a couple years ago. I mean, then you can sit him down. But
well, I think they thought they had a better defense on paper. I think they had. They thought they had a better threat with Julio Jones out there in theory. And I think they hoped that maybe that would happen. Remember, Trent Dilfer, about a year ago at this time, when we asked the question about the workload, he said, yeah, I would try to shave off 75 carries off of his workload. And I said to myself, you know, that's a pretty good goal to try to have. Keep the carries around 300 and not get up into that dangerous workload that history tells you costs you almost every time. It's not like, hey, half the time when a guy has 370 carries, he drops off. No, it's almost every time. So if they ignored that, they were wrong. So I think they may have had a plan, but when you go into the week and, okay, we don't have A.J. Brown, we don't have Julio Jones, we got offensive line issues, what do you think we're going to do? You know, that game in Seattle, you know, when they were in trouble, Derrick Henry bailed him out with the big run, got him back in the game. You know, you can go right down the list. You know, against the Jets where they struggled, they lost. They didn't have A.J. Brown or Julio Jones in the lineup at all. 33 carries. They leaned on him. So, like, what choice did they have when you got down to it? So you got all the best laid plans, but when you get into battle, you had to go to what you had.
Right. How do you pick and choose the 75 carries that you shave off?
It's hard.
What if those 75 carries that you chose to shave off are the ones, the important runs?
Oh, and how about this? Maybe they planned on Darrington Evans maybe having a few of those carries. Of course, he gets hurt in the second preseason game.
Who?
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I know it's easy to make fun of it now, but you have a plan in the offseason. You used a pretty high draft pick on this guy. So maybe you thought you could get some mileage out of that. That went out the window. That wasn't an option after the second preseason game. So
correct.
Now, the only thing that I would say would be, could they have lessened the load late in the Kansas City game where they had the game in hand? I brought that up on Monday after that game. He ended up with 29 carries. I think they were trying to get him to 100 yards. I think they were thinking maybe he'll bust a big one here and he'll be well on his way to another 2,000-yard season. He had 100 yards in 5 straight games at that point, and he took a beating in that game. Then the next week, he got hurt early in the game, the very first possession, if I remember, and played the entire game, a game that goes to overtime, and he had 28 carries. Now, I have no idea. Nobody's really come out. They wouldn't tell us if they did know, but we'll never know. Did the injury get worse after he first started feeling it and then decided to come back in the game? It was his least effective game of the season by far, 28 carries for 68 yards. He was clearly bothered by that, and yet they kept going to him. Did that contribute to the degree of the problem? This is what we'll never know.
Again, then there's you. What if you don't? And then you don't. You might not win the game. I mean, that, again, you're what are you sacrificing? You may be sacrificing a lot of stats that we've talked about, huge runs by him, which you know ultimately resulted in wins for them. I mean, what are you sacrificing? I'll give you, it's not an apples to apples, just again, my little fishbowl world, my little tiny world, just trying to use it as a comparison, because I do think it's easier said than done. I understand that you know, it's not easy. I've done that with our kids and trying to preserve arms. And you know what? We've lost some really tough games. And I look back and I go, you know what? I probably should have rode the hot hand, and I should have.
It's a great. I think it's a good analogy.
I feel like it would have been a different result, and I'm going to take blame. I feel like I cost us the game. Because
but you're looking at the long term health.
I'm trying to preserve.
Yeah, you're looking at the long term.
I realize. I think I just cost us the game because if I ride the hot hand, I think the results would have been different.
I think that's a really interesting thought, and I think managers in Major League Baseball, when you play 162 games, often are faced with that. Hey, I've used this reliever. He has been on fire, but I've used him three games in a row, man. I can't come back with him. I've got to sit this one out. But, man, I'd love to have him come in and face this left-hander.
But it wasn't even, like, overused. It's not like, yeah, I was teetering on, hey, you're like, what, you're, you know, you're out of control. It's none of that. It's just like preserving him, whether it's,
right,
hey, I feel like we can win this game, and then we've got another game, the championship game. You know, hey, you got to work your rotation. Yeah. You got to figure out what arms you'll
but
have.
But you get in the thick of the battle. You get in the thick of the battle, and you've got, you're forced to make that decision one, yeah, way or the other.
And so it's not easy. And oh, by the way, it's an inexact science about they've tried to. I feel like they've tried to preserve Julio Jones. Guess what? It didn't change anything. It really didn't. Like, them preserving Julio Jones to, like, give him more time, it didn't really change anything. Like, they preserve. So it's an
exact. I mean, that is a weird one. You know, you could argue that maybe, and these are all, again, questions that you can't know the answer one way or the other. You just try to make the best decision you can. Maybe they avoided a season-ending surgery or something if they had really pushed the envelope early in the season. We don't know. Because he did play his best. His best was early in the season against Seattle. I guess you'd say it was best Julio Jones type of game. But he did have a couple of nice games at the very, very end that you were glad he was out there as opposed to not being out there at all. But you're right. These are all very tough decisions that you have to make that there are no right or wrong answers for.
We don't know either way. I don't know. It's just I'm trying to be honest. Like, my gut feeling, thinking about it later, like, did I do the right thing? If the Titans lose, I'm telling you, Mike Vrabel will be doing the same thing. There's not a doubt in my mind. He would be going, did I cost us the game by taking Derrick Henry out, trying to preserve him? We ended up losing that game. Was it because of my decision? I mean, That will happen. And, oh, by the way, then he might get questioned about it too. And he may have to talk about it. At least I don't get questioned. I don't have to do a press conference, right? It's not easy. It's easier said than done. I understand the premise. I understand why you would have those thoughts. But in the end, like, where do you go about trying to slice up that pie? All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up the first hour of Darren Donica Chase next. We'll talk to a legal expert who is a contributor for The Athletic to start the second hour. Looking forward to that. With the whole Brian Flores mess. By the way, everybody involved that he named and called out, they have adamantly, vehemently denied. Like, to the hilt, right? They have gone to the top of the mountain and screamed, "We are innocent. We did not do any of that." Well, I got news for everybody involved. Somebody's lying.
Two sides to every story.
Yeah, but somebody's lying.
Sliced bread.
Yeah, somebody's lying because there's no way everybody's innocent. So
yeah.
It is amazing. The Giants, the Dolphins, the Broncos. This is defamatory, which, you know, I'm going to ask that word because yesterday – I don't remember who we were talking to. Maybe it was Elliot. Was saying that that word typically means, I'm going to sue you. When that word is thrown out there. And it seems like everybody's throwing that word back at Flores. So I don't know where this is going. But it is a hot mess. And it has just been interesting to see the reaction from everybody of, I don't know what. Look, we got our proof. We did everything the right way. Like, really? Like, the Giants thing, wasn't that their response is, what are you talking about? We were still interviewing people. We hadn't made any decision. So let me just get this straight. Bill Belichick did he go, you know, get some cards read? Did he get his palm read? Like, how did he know? So you had made a decision, but yet he's texting, you know, a coach saying, hey, congratulations? Really? Like, you expect me to believe that? That one, that seems like a bit of a stretch. No, you were still, you had not made a decision. You were still going through the process. And we don't know why Bill Belichick did that, really. So he just made it up? He just poof? Does he have the book from Back to the Future? Does he have that? He knows?
I believe that was Back to the Future 2.
Oh, that was it? Really?
Yeah.
That was 2?
That was the book, yeah.
Okay.
That book was pretty key.
It was.
Pretty key.
Yeah,
maybe he had the book. I don't know. Maybe he likes Michael J. Fox.
I'd love to have that book.
Yeah.
Man. I wouldn't have picked
now,
Kansas City in the Rams.
Speaking of
the
trying to know the future, I do have one more question for you on the Derrick Henry front before we move on to our next guest. So if you're Mike Vrabel, you're sitting there this year and you're making your plan, knowing you got all kinds of salary cap gymnastics, and that's even setting aside if you want to do the Jared Stillman, you know, rearrange everything and try to make a play for Aaron Rodgers, okay? He's even suggesting yesterday that, you know, if the fans speak up and squawk loud enough, then maybe they'll try to do it. He was asking that question. So, I mean, they're going down a rabbit hole there, which I still don't think is going to happen. I'm still working in the world that they're coming back with basically the same group. So to me, this is a very important question, is what's your plan? As the Titans saw that Eddie George was not quite the same back, they had Robert Holcomb. They ended up drafting Chris Brown, and they had a change of pace ready. And arguably, those guys were quicker, faster than Eddie George at that stage of his career, even though Eddie George still grinded his way to some production in 2002, 2003. They had those other guys ready. We've talked about Foreman, and obviously Hilliard was excellent as well. But in the budget, can they fit? Did those guys maybe earn a contract from somebody? We know that teams don't really pay running backs. But I wonder how easy it would be, even if you wanted to keep those guys, with all the other decisions they have to make.
All I will say to you is, one, neither one of us have to do what John Robinson has to do, or the other 31 GMs besides John Robinson in the NFL have to do with a cap. But I will tell you this, Willie, it's just like the same thing I say to you about injuries. They all have to do this. Like, they're all going to play next year. They'll all have rosters, and all of them are going to have to make tough decisions. It's not just the Titans. The Green Bay Packers are $50 million over the cap. Over the cap. $50 million. The New Orleans Saints are $74 million.
Sure.
Over the cap.
Right. So I know where you're going.
The Titans are under the cap.
Yeah,
they all have to do this stuff.
Yes.
Like, this is not like, my gosh.
But my question is, as you make these decisions, is it your belief that you can enter the season next year with an expectation of Derrick Henry being Derrick Henry? That to me
is
a very,
question.
Very big question. You have to answer that in your mind before you make these decisions. I heard Joe say you proceed next year as if he's still the guy.
I agree with that. 100%. 100%.
Okay.
We have to be
but is it
shown
realistic?
Otherwise.
Is that realistic? I know
yes.
how much we believe in Derrick Henry. Is it realistic that he could be Derrick
yes.
Henry again next year?
You're asking the
top
me
level?
If I believe it's realistic that an elite player can be different than everybody else, yes, because he's not a Jag.
History tells you no.
Okay, I know you're going to point out history, and history is on your side.
History tells you no. So I think it would be wise to have that plan B ready to go. The problem is, how much money do you have to address plan B? You've made this argument many times in the past about the backup quarterback. Everybody would love to have a good, experienced backup quarterback ready to go if needed. But the budget sometimes tells you, and the availability tells you, not every team can have that. So where is that on the priority list when you have Landry? You got your offensive line. You've got you've got any number of other things you've got to address.
I think it's It's got to be up there. Look, Deontay Foreman was a great story. We had him on the show. He was awesome to talk to. I'm rooting for him to come back. But it's not like Deontay Foreman, you know, that second half of the season, he's going to break the bank. I mean, come on. Let's not get – the guy was on the streets, okay? And he had a great second half filling in for Derrick Henry. It's not like the Brinks truck is, going to his driveway. I hope he turns out to be a great success story, and I hope that he stays here and he continues to provide much-needed help for Derrick Henry when he's not in there running the football. I hope that's the case. They can afford Deontay Foreman. For all the people like, oh, I don't know how you're going to bring him. He's not going to break the bank. What is Foreman going to get? The running backs we already know are undervalued, underpaid, undervalued. That's the cream of the crop ones. A guy like Deontay Foreman who was on the street? In the middle of the season, you think all of a sudden now he's going to break the bank? No. I think, to your point, he's a priority, and you figure out a way to get him back, period. And by the way, he probably feels something for this organization for giving him another chance, right? And he knows people. He probably had a lot of fun this season, developed relationships. I suspect it may be a little bit easier than everybody thinks. All right, we'll come back. We'll start the second hour talking a little legal action with Alicia Jessup, who is a contributor for The Athletic, also a professor at Pepperdine. We'll talk to her next here on Darren Dunnick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.